Hello everybody, my name is James P. Wagner.
And I'm Nick Hale.
And we're the publishers for Local Gems Press, and we're here today for the Art of the Book Launch, A Poet's Guide to Marketing. This is a highly requested topic that we get. As publishers for Local Gems Press, we've launched over 200 poetry titles, and we've had quite a lot of book launches that go along with that. We've done quite a lot of book tours, and people are always asking us when it comes to launching their own personal book how to go about doing that, and so we decided to give the people what they wanted, like we usually do. So, first and foremost, you have a poetry book.
Congratulations! You've done the first step.
Yeah, having a completed and published poetry book, whether or not that's done through a small press, or you self-published it, had it printed, or if you were one of the lucky 17 out there who have gotten a poetry book through a really big publisher. Not that I know very many big poetry publishers, but congratulations, it's an accomplishment in and of itself. Most poets who write never actually get to the point of having completed a book, much less actually getting that book made up and printed, however you did it. So it's an accomplishment, and it's a milestone you've come over yourself. So take a moment to just appreciate the fact you're already ahead of about 90% of poets out there and people who take pen to paper. So,
yeah, the hard part is over. Congratulations.
Well, at least one of the hard parts is over. So now that you've done through all that work and you've given yourself a moment to appreciate your accomplishment, it's time to plan the book launch. But before we get into the actual nitty-gritty of doing the book launch, let's give a few facts about poetry books themselves and talk about some numbers in terms of bestsellers and the statistics about contemporary poetry books and things like that. Now, when we hear bestseller, which we hear pretty often, we're always hearing about the J.K. Rowlings or the J.R. Tolkiens out there and the millions and millions of copies sold, usually a fiction book, something that just completely went crazy. Those are the top 1% of the top 1%. When it comes to actual bestseller numbers, like you're considering New York Times bestsellers, the numbers to make that are actually much smaller than one would think. And when it comes to contemporary poetry books, it's actually probably a lot smaller than the average person would think. To be considered a bestseller in the fiction genre, you would have to sell approximately 7,500 to 10,000 copies of your book. For it to be nonfiction, it would have to be 5,000 to 7,500 copies. And for poetry bestseller, contemporary living poet, we're talking about 500 to 800 copies.
Yeah. 700.
Yes, I said 100. 500 to 800 is contemporary poetry bestseller, according to New York Times. Now, the average contemporary poetry book sells less than 100 copies. I know that seems like a little when you compare it to some of the poetry books you may be familiar with in schools like Edgar Allan Poe, Walt Whitman, Robert Frost, or all the famous best-selling dead poets that the publishers who print their books constantly don't actually have to give any royalties to, which is why they constantly print them. And why they constantly put out, 1,800 different editions of it, different forwards from different academic specialists, et cetera, et cetera. And also has the added benefit of having circulation built in through the school curriculum, because pretty much if you can get something into the general school curriculum, well, you're guaranteed to sell hundreds of thousands of copies of it. Most contemporary poets are not that lucky. And the truth of the matter is that 98% of published poetry collections are never going to actually find their way into a traditional bookstore.
If you've been in a traditional bookstore anytime soon and you've actually looked for the poetry section, those poetry sections have been getting smaller and smaller, and they're usually made up of what we would, I guess, call the classics, the poetry by poets who've been dead for a very long time. And sometimes, if in the case of my local Barnes & Noble, for example, they're hidden behind magazine racks or other things. When you think about all the poets out there writing books and all the poetry collections being published, your odds of actually getting your books into that bookstore are very, very small.
Yeah, well, at least the traditional way. There's also the possibility of other methods like consignment deals, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the presentation. However, part of the reason for this, and this is going to be where you're going to get to see a little bit behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz, so to speak, it has to do with the model of distribution and the fundamental changes that have existed in the publishing world in the last 20 years, considering, small press and print on demand has become much more of, a commonplace thing and tools that publishers now use. During the 20th century, when publishing was, you know, actually built up to the fact that you had major distributors who were printing thousands of copies of works at a time and sending them out to many different places in a region, that's how the model has kind of shifted since then, and it really doesn't apply too well for poetry, because this is typically how it works. For the number of bookstores in a given region, there's usually a book distributor that they all rely on, especially, you know, chains like Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, etc. The distributors will negotiate contracts with the publishers. In order to be an approved publisher to actually work with the distributor, you have to set up the vendor licensing and all this stuff. And they usually want a large amount of copies up front. Typically, on the low end, 1,000 copies. Sometimes on the higher end, 2,500 or 3,000 copies. Which, as you were just listening earlier, for poetry, an average contemporary bestseller is 500 to 800 copies. So you're already looking at having to print and ship more copies than is considered a bestseller right from the get-go. The other thing about when you send the books to these distributors is the distributors, they get the books and then they send them out to all the bookstores, and they usually keep them on the shelves in a bookstore for a period of around 6 months. The publisher doesn't get paid anything from the distributor until after that 6 month period, sometimes a year period, whatever the shelf life of the book is actually done. And then the publishers have to guarantee to take back from the distributor, if they don't sell, up to 70% of the books. So traditional marketing leaves poetry publishers who use the old model to lose up to roughly 70% of the revenue spent on copies before royalties or even distributed. The average distribution minimum is higher than what is even considered a poetry bestseller. So you're looking at thousands and thousands of dollars that would have to be spent into just producing every single title, which is why a lot of poetry publishers don't go the old traditional route. To be fair, though, it's not just poetry publishers who are abandoning that route. A lot of publishers of fiction and nonfiction are also opting for more direct marketing, sales, newsletters, direct distribution and things like that themselves. But this basically explains why if you're a poet in this day and age, you're going to have to kind of become a little bit of a marketer yourself. And if you're going to be being a marketer yourself, some of the things that you're going to have to get used to doing are book signings, consignment deals, book tours, and the infamous book launch.
The book launch!
Yay! The book launch, which is what we're here to talk about now that we got all that pesky math and facts and figures and, you know, facts.
Out of the way.
Out of the way.
It's done. It's done. So yeah. The book launch is the author's big day. Congratulations. You've got a book. You've got copies of it. You've got an event. This is your time to shine. It's your wedding. It's your birthday party. Except you can have more than one of them. I would hope you have more than one birthday party. But the book launch is a gathering of family, friends, fans, and more. So it doesn't just have to be about poetry fans. Invite your family. Invite the uncle who never has read a poem in his life. You know, invite your neighbors. Anybody who you would consider important to you is somebody you should invite to your book launch.
Yeah, and more importantly, a book launch should be its own event, which is something that we're probably going to mention multiple times throughout this presentation, because very often in many of the poetry communities that we travel to, we see monthly readings, you know, or quarterly readings, usually booking somebody who just came out with a book, and they feature the regular reading as their book launch, which now it's, you know, having a reading where you're the feature and you're getting to sell your books or do a signing is definitely a good thing and it's a good supplemental, but this event should be its own event and it should be advertised well in advance because this is a big to-do. And also don't forget that in the regular world, book launches are rare, whereas in the poetry communities and the writing world, there's a lot of people who have books. But the average person out there, how often do they get to go to a book launch, especially a book launch where they actually know the author personally?
Yeah, I know a lot of people get very excited to come to book launches. They say, oh, this is the first time I've ever known anyone who's been published before. You know, my brother just got published in a book. My cousin, my husband, just got into a book. And it's a big, exciting event for people who don't have their own books, who are not writers themselves. And, you know, to be close to somebody who actually has been published is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, we say all the time, and we'll probably say it again in this presentation, that one of the biggest mistakes that poets make when it comes to their book is only advertising their poetry book to other poets. Which would kind of be like a restaurant, only advertising their restaurant to other restaurant owners. It's like, I mean, sure, they might want to come and, you know, to get the different flavor and all that, and they may want to be supportive because they're part of your community. But if you're not advertising it to other people who don't own restaurants, you're really probably not going to be in business very long. And also the fact that if, you know, it's poetry is not rare to other poets. So, you know, they may come out to support you. They may really like your stuff. But, you know, in terms of getting them to the same level of excitement as you might get other people in your life, you know, you probably have a better chance of getting, like, those rabid, really excited, you know, really gung-ho to come out and support you people from other areas.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that they also assume that the only people who want to eat are restaurant owners. You know, like, if you're not into writing poetry, you're not into reading it, and you're not into hearing it performed, then that's definitely not true. So you would be surprised just how many people you wouldn't expect to be into it to actually be really, really interested in poetry and actually have a great time at your book launch.
Yeah, especially in the last, like, 10 or 15 years or so, people are seeing more and more the actual value that poetry has. We've actually had situations pretty often when we're on book tour where we do, you know, these anthology launches, like, all up and down the East Coast. Usually it's, you know, a gathering of a bunch of poets from a particular region all in the same book. And, you know, when we get, like, a bunch of readers who come out to want to read from the book, they're usually bringing, you know, their husbands or wives, their kids, you know, family, friends, or whatever. Like, even if they just have one poem in this book, they're bringing out an audience to come and see it. And we've actually had, you know, people come up to us after the event, like, the, you know, the regular audience who aren't in the book, who are like, you know, knowing this was poetry, I wasn't expecting to enjoy this, but I actually had a lot of fun.
I thought this was going to be boring.
Yeah.
Why is this so much fun?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there is much to be appreciated in poetry these days. So, book launch, book tour, both? Well, I would recommend both, but before you can get to the tour...
I would argue the tour includes the launch, so...
Yes.
The tour has to be both, but...
There you go. But a book launch, you know, just to have, you know, the subtle distinctions between a book launch and the book tour or a book signing. The book launch is typically the first event where the book is for sale. Even if you have some kind of a pre-order system set up, usually the books don't actually get to the people until this launch event, and usually not until after the launch event is it made generally available to the general public. This event, again, should be a big standalone affair and special. Smaller events can follow the book launch, you know, be a part of the tour. You can do a book signing here, a reading here, et cetera, maybe an interview here. But smaller events will never replace the book launch. It will never replace the excitement you can build up. It'll never replace, in most cases, the audience you can build up for a book launch. Because while lots of people can make supplementary tour dates, the book launch, you know, the big to-do, the party, you know, the day they want to be at, usually becomes a hyper-attended event.
And you might be thinking, who's going to want to come to my big event? I don't know that many people. So when we say big, we don't mean you have to fill out a stadium.
Yeah, we're not talking like hockey team levels here or anything like that.
So big really depends on you, how many people you have to invite and how many fans you have, what your community size is like. But when we say big, we mean it should be separate from, you know, a regular monthly reading and things like that, and it should be special for you. It's something where you're inviting your people, your community, your family, your friends, as we said before. So don't worry too much about big, because trust us, your book launches will grow. The next book will be bigger.
Yeah, and, you know, like, again, think of it in terms of, like, you know, planning a wedding or a baby shower or a birthday party. You know, it should be, you know, like, relative to that size, it should be a big, fun event that everybody gets excited about. So, now for the practical side of some of these things, picking a location, which is something that we get a lot of questions about, is like, where should I have the book launch, you know? And I, in fact, one of the reasons that, you know, upon following up with some poets who have actually done their book launches at monthly readings, was one of the things that they came back and said was, well, I wanted to have it somewhere else, but I didn't really know how else to go about it or where to do it, so I just ended up doing it there. So, but there are plenty of places other than, you know, bookstores that you could actually host a book launch. And bookstores, depending on the size or shape of the bookstore, they may be good for a reading, they may be good for just a signing. That all depends on the size and scope of the individual store. But event halls, VFW halls, you know, catering halls, you know, places you would have a birthday party or a wedding are always, you know, good to look into. Prices may vary, you know, and contracts may vary. Sometimes they demand you have food, or sometimes they demand you have a cash bar or whatever. So that all comes down to that. Some places will just let you rent the event space. clubhouses, you know, for various organizations like Moose Lodges or, you know, Order of Hibernia.
A lot of apartment buildings and HOAs also have clubhouses that would fall under the same category.
That's true. Yeah. In some of those cases, you have to live or know somebody who lives in one of those areas to make use of them. But in other cases, actually, sometimes I've seen places where they actually just rent them out.
Some of them are prohibitively expensive, but some of them are actually very reasonable.
Yeah, so pretty much all these options are subject to your budget and also how much, you know, what the time and the resources and the energy you're willing to put into, you know, making this event as good as it can be, and that varies for everybody. Hotel conference rooms are another example that usually people overlook, but they're always there. Hotel, now, you know, there's a lot of hotels and a lot of their space size and structures vary. You know, sometimes it's just as small as a boardroom. Sometimes they have spaces for 5,000 people, but usually a place for, you know, 40 to 60 people in a regular room in most areas is pretty reasonable, like anywhere from the $150 to $300 range for, you know, like say a 4-hour event. So if that's in your budget range, that might be a good option, and particularly because the hotel itself will help you set up all the chairs and the podium and all that stuff. Some hotels, if they have a restaurant, they kind of demand that all the catering be done through them, but that's a whole other story.
And some of them will usually supply complimentary, at least water. Sometimes they'll have mints or some other little snack thing that they'll put out. Usually they'll have you have water at the minimum.
Yeah. So. Well, free water is good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, we've been in some where they give you free coffee and tea, so that's nice too. But again, that all depends on the hotel and what areas you were fortunate enough to live in. Restaurants is another good location, especially restaurants that have a banquet room or a separate party room. And the good thing about doing it at those places is that, you know, there's no the burden on you to provide the food isn't necessarily there, depending on how you go about it. I mean, you could have the party catered yourself, or it could just be you know, have an agreement with the restaurant that you have that room because you're providing a minimum of X number of people, and then everybody's responsible for their own food.
The other good thing about restaurants is that most of the time there's no charge for the room itself. There's just an expectation that most people in your party are going to be buying food. So the cost of the room is also not on you. And usually then people will show up, order from the menus, and so the food is provided by the restaurant, paid for by the visitors. And the room is paid for by the restaurant, so you don't need to worry about paying all this extra money just to coordinate the event. So if your budget is low, restaurant dining rooms are a very good place to look.
Yeah. Cafes are another good example. I mean, again, it depends on the size and shape of the cafe, but a lot of cafes usually do music nights. Some of them have poetry nights, you know, comedy nights. If there is space there, you know, usually they're willing to book events because they want to bring people in to buy coffee and snacks. So similar to the restaurants, sometimes actually even a little bit better set up than restaurants because they may have a good area for a microphone and, you know, set up for an event. Other times they may not. Again, depends on, you know, the place.
The two downsides to the cafes would be, number one, the noise. It's kind of loud when they're making coffee in the background. And number two is that you don't know who's there for your actual event and who's there just because they're getting coffee. That's both a positive and a downside, because on the one hand, it's hard to judge how many people are actually there for your event. On the other hand, you'll get strangers who will walk in and possibly be interested.
Yeah, that's true. And I've seen that work on both sides. I've seen book launches happen in cafes where just casual cafe goers come in, get hooked listening to the poetry, and then they decide they want to buy the book. And then I've seen on the opposite end of that, people who had, you know, regular readings at a cafe overestimating the audience they had, and then when they actually had to move to a library, they realized just how small the actual poetry itself following was because there were so many people in there, but they were just there because it was the cafe. So it could work both ways in that regard.
Speaking of libraries, that's not on our list, and there's a specific reason for that.
Yeah. Libraries are a place that you can use, you know, to do the book launch, but you do need to be careful about what the state and local regulations are, because in some areas you're not allowed to actually sell books within the library because they have state funding restrictions. So if that's the case, probably not the best idea to do a book launch in a place you can't sell books. And then there's other restrictions, like they're closed at 9 o'clock, and, you know, the in terms of allocating the space, you may have a lot of competition. But if you are in an area where they have no problem you selling the book, that's a place that could be used. And the other one to consider is small theaters. There are lots of theaters out there that have, you know, regular showings, but also actually rent out the space. Theaters come in all shapes and sizes. There's like 99-seater less theaters out there that, you know, are pretty open to renting their space out for shows, and they need talent and things like that. Sometimes you can work out different deals with the theaters, you know, like maybe if there's a ticket price, maybe you get a percentage of it, they get a percentage of it. Sometimes they'll just have you rent flat fee, but that all depends on the individual place. Also depends if there's any theaters in your area. You know, not all areas are created equal, but it's a place to consider.
Yeah, and now keep in mind, this isn't a complete list. And the more of these you do, the better you'll get at it, because it takes practice and creativity. But I've seen book launches in yoga studios, martial arts studios, art galleries. In fact, there's an art gallery near me that has hosted several poetry readings and book launches. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, actually, on Long Island, New York, for a while, we had a regular poetry reading in a tattoo parlor, because the tattoo parlor also had a cafe that was attached to it. And so on the one side, they'd have the buzzy noise going where they'd be giving people tattoos. And on the other side, in this little cafe, there was a small stage where we would be doing poetry. So really, you know, you never know. There's a lot of different possibilities, a lot of different businesses, especially now. There's so many like pop-up stores and different things. You never know what might work.
We've used museums. We had a book launch, an anthology launch at a comedy club once.
Mm-hmm.
It really just depends on your theme and what is local around you.
Yeah, and I mean, I've even seen successful book launches held in people's backyards. You know, if you've got the space, you know, barbecue style. So the sky really is the limit. So now we get into you know, the caveat of the word big in terms of, you know, how many people should be in attendance of your book launch. And that's obviously a subjective and up for interpretation ideology. But yourself should definitely be at your book launch.
That's a good idea.
Usually, yes. I mean, I guess in theory you could have somebody else launch your book for you. I would not recommend that, considering most of poetry book sales these days come from the actual author themselves being there and wanting to sign them. So, you know, you probably should be there. Family and friends, like, again, and the funny thing is when we do presentations all over and we talk about this, it's amazing to me sometimes the amount of resistance we get when we tell people, invite your family and friends. Like, yeah. You think, it's like, you think that, you know, people think that their family and friends all hate them or something.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they would never be interested in that. They're not into that kind of thing. They just wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
And I get the hesitation, but at the same time, these are people who care about you. Mm-hmm. So even if they don't necessarily, you know, enjoy the poetry, they might still just want to be there to support you.
Yeah, like even if poetry is not their thing, you know, if they're in any way, shape, or form supportive of you and your endeavors and you as a person, they're most likely going to show up to your book launch. I mean, especially because that's an incredible thing. It's an accomplishment. It's unique. And, you know, when we tell people this, you know, 9 times out of 10, when they actually go ahead and go through with it, they're like, wow, yeah, they really all came out and they supported it and they had a good time, you know, and so they actually sometimes get surprised with how many of them actually show up and show support. And for the 1 out of 10 where they don't, well, I suggest you get a new family and friends.
Yeah. I mean, oh, well, I guess family you can't really pick, but with friends, yeah.
Yeah.
You should hope that your friends would want to come out and check it out.
Well, you can kind of pick your in-laws, but
yeah,
sometimes they kind of come as a package deal, you know, so you can't really, I guess. But yeah, so obviously you be there, your family and friends, you invite them, fans. You know, and in terms of fans, I know that fan is like a weird word because, you know, these days everybody has fans. Like if you have a social media, you probably have fans, even if it's two.
At least
you know?
In the summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. And bring your air conditioners also. No. Yeah. But if you've been out there on the poetry scene, you know, and if you're at the point where you actually have a book, I assume that you probably have been for a while going to workshops and going to readings and part of the community, unless you literally just like, you know, gung-ho rushed right to the book, in which case I might question, you know, how good the book is, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt and wink and smile. But if you've been on the scene at all doing, you know, like what you should be doing at this point when you have a book, you probably have accumulated, you know, some kind of a following, you know, fans or at least fan friends, if nothing else, who are familiar with you and your work and will definitely want to be there. And then the other thing which comes into a little bit more of something we'll talk about later is while shaping the actual show itself of the book launch, other performers at the event, you know, if you're going to have people kind of open or close for you, kind of like, you know, at a concert, and any fans that they might bring in, you know, if you happen to have friends who are good, you know, performers and have a following in their own right, that could definitely help bring people in for you.
Yeah, and that kind of ties into, I think this might have been a question that we had, sort of a co-feature, if you do like a double header type of book launch with somebody else who just had a book come out, that would kind of fall into that category as another type of person to invite.
Yeah, You know, sometimes two followings are better than one. Sometimes three followings are better than one.
It's not on there, but if your publisher is local or you publish through a small press, it's a pretty good etiquette to invite your publisher.
Yes.
I'm a little bit biased, but...
Yes. In fact, you might want to put them right in the front and have them have, like, a gold-plated seat, you know? maybe, like, a few inches higher than everybody else in the room.
Yeah. Definitely a special thanks at the beginning.
And at the end. And maybe have, like, a, you know, a banner in the background with, like, pictures of them with, like, you know, Caesar's crowns on or something like that. Okay. Maybe not all that last part, but yes, definitely invite your publisher and also have your publisher advertise your event to, you know, the people they know as well. So, the show itself, you know, getting into a little bit what we just talked about with other performers, would the show be just you reading from your book? Would the show be include other poets? Would the show include an open mic? You know, in concert, musicians usually add opening acts, and you could do the same thing for your book launch to help you boost attendance and also just to make the show more interesting. Not that, you know, a poet reading from their book isn't interesting, but sometimes having some other things in there helps. At my most recent book launch, which I launched, you know, a few months ago, my opening act was actually a 13-year-old kid who is a widely published poet in my area. He's actually a mentee of one of my county's former poets laureate. And this kid is just absolutely incredible, and he's actually about to come out with his first book at 13, which even predates me and the really not good books I did when I was in high school, except the difference is his book is actually good, so, you know, so he's kind of ahead of the curve in a lot of ways, but, so he was, like, he was my opening act, and not only was, you know, it just a unique thing, but also, well, you know, kids bring people in, so it was good marketing as well as it was entertaining for the show.
You probably don't have as much overlap in your fans, too.
Yeah.
People who enjoy your poetry.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so do you want to include other poets in your act? You know, I at one point in one of my previous book launches, I actually had a martial arts demonstration at that. I've seen people have musicians. I've seen people have comedians. So it doesn't necessarily just have to be poets in your act. You could put in some other things. But you also probably don't want to go too crazy with having too many acts because people do still have an attention span and most of the people are there are probably there specifically for you, which was another funny thing about my last book launch is I noticed is that of, you know, all the people there, I had like over almost 50 people sign up to read at the open mic after I read, but at halftime, actually, most of those people were like, you know, I don't even actually feel like reading. I just wanted to see you. And, you know, we ended up with only like 18 open micers. And I was like really surprised by that because I was like, wow, normally poets come out because they want to actually, you know, they want to read themselves, but they were actually there just to see the show.
That's a nice feeling. You do want to be careful with things like musicians and comedians or something that's not necessarily poetry. Because one thing we've noticed with certain with some readings that also feature this types of media is that it tends to take over the music or the comedy will take over and distract people from the main show. And you want your book to be the main show.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, when it comes to the open mic question, that's another thing that people always ask about, should my book launch have an open mic? And that's something that I admittedly have always had mixed feelings about, because on the one hand, an open mic can bring more people there for sure, because if other people get a chance to read, it definitely helps. But on the other hand, you also never know what you're going to get when it comes to an open mic. You could get anybody off the street who doesn't really even care about your book or the show, and they just want to perform.
And that's especially a consideration if you're in a family-friendly environment when you don't know who's coming in. So what you can do is sort of a mediated open mic. I know that's not the word for it, but it's not coming to mind right now.
Yeah, a juried open mic.
Yes.
Yeah, which is actually what I do a lot for my book launches is I, you know, tend to pick people who I kind of already know their work and I'm familiar with them, and I invite them to kind of, you know, a juried open mic. And, you know, so that way it's like if you're on the invited list, which actually can sometimes work a little better because people feel, you know, special because they were asked, you know, not everybody's asked. And it also kind of lets you control the, you know, the mood and the pacing of the show and also make sure that the people you're asking are probably, you know, good. And also, you know, not going to, like, just, you know...
offend everybody?
Yeah.
Scare away the children?
Yeah, definitely. So those are all things to consider.
You want to have food? You want to have snacks? You're at a restaurant, so it doesn't matter?
Yeah. You know, should your event have food or snacks? And I've seen successful book launches with or without. So this is another one of those personal choices. You know, some events lend themselves better to food than others, you know, like restaurants do or cafes. You know, location is also dependent because some places are perfectly fine with food, some places will encourage you to buy food, and some places definitely don't want you to have food at all. Other places are fine with you having food as long as you buy the food through them. So this all comes down to, you know, how you envision the thing, where you're envisioning it, and what's going on there.
And also if you're charging.
Yes, if you're going to be charging admission for the show, then the price of the food could be rolled into that. And that's another thing that we should discuss is, are you charging admission for the show? In most cases, you know, I know that sometimes people think like, well, if it's free, more people will come. That's not always the case, actually. Sometimes people tend to value a little bit more what they pay for, and especially if you're actually going to be renting a venue, you know, where you're going to have to put up money in advance, having a little bit like, you know, a $5 cover charge is not necessarily going to turn anybody away. In fact, you could kind of create like a, you know, a bundle deal or something where, like, you know, for the book, you know, you'll get the book and the admission for this price. You know, maybe if you're having a raffle, throw in some raffle tickets with that to have like a nice little easy bundle or something like that. However, if you're going to be doing it in like a restaurant where they're going to be paying for their own food and you're not necessarily paying for the room, you know, charging admission on top of that when they're going to be buying your book sometimes looks like you're, you know, being one of those greedy people. So you might not want to do that.
It's also really not necessary. And in a restaurant, honestly, it's hard to keep track of who's already paid admission and who hasn't. So
yeah.
It's kind of not worth it.
Yeah. As a general rule of thumb, if you're paying for the place, charging admission, you know, is pretty okay. If you're getting the place for free, then, you know, just be happy if they buy your books.
If you're providing anything extra like food, usually it's a lot easier to ask for an admission fee on top of it.
Yeah, definitely. So, one thing that people are always wondering about with you know, poetry events and just getting people there, because it seems like it's the age-old poet's problem of, you know, how to get people to show up. So let's talk a little bit about advertising methods. Now, obviously a good show should be appreciated by a good crowd. And by a good crowd, I mean more than, you know, just your mom.
Thanks both of you for coming.
Yeah, thank you both for showing up. This has been wonderful.
So how do you do that?
Well, some traditional methods, obviously, flyers. I think a lot of people do these. And people tend to be like, oh, well, you know, in this day and age, you know, everything is digital. Can print media still be good advertising? The answer is yes, it can. Don't underestimate it, because even though, you know, internet advertising and, you know, other things like that, which we will talk about, are very good and should not be, you know, ignored. In fact, they might even be the bulk of your advertising. But, you know, one flyer on a properly placed table or a properly placed sign or a properly placed community board somewhere, one flyer can hit 1,000 people, you know, whereas you will have to send 1,000 emails to get that same effect.
And there are plenty of places, local grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, a lot of the times will have community boards that'll let you put flyers up for free. And so you just go there, put up a flyer. And flyers are also a good thing to have as you go to other poetry events. You bring them with you, you hand them out, and people will show up to your event.
Yeah, and also you give a handful to an organizer you're friends with, and they might distribute them for you at other places they go to, too.
Yeah.
Which also comes down to things like business cards. Another, you know, easy media to get, usually pretty cheap to get. You can get, you know, like 1,000 of them for like $30 or something like that, depending on most places. And sometimes those places have discount deals where you can double up on that, so they're easy to distribute, hand out a bunch to people. You know, sometimes they can even double as an admission ticket if you want to do it that way. But, you know, very good to hand out. Postcards, same thing. You know, and the thing about postcards, actually, is there's something called bulk rate mailing, which is something that a lot of people don't even really realize is there. Well, I mean, they kind of do, because usually they're the recipient of it. You know, you get those postcards or those flyers in your mailbox that just say resident that come from, you know, somewhere, some restaurant locally or something that's trying to advertise to you. Well, the post office actually has it where for, you know, cheaper than what is, you know, the regular postage, which is why it's bulk rate mailing. If you give them like a stack of business cards, you can pick mail routes in a specific area where the, you know, the postman will actually drop one off in every mailbox along with their mail. Prices on that vary, but it's actually pretty reasonable. And so if you're having the event in a specific area and you wanted to hit, like, say, you know, 500 houses in the surrounding area, you could do that for a reasonable price, like probably only a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, well, you can also place ads mostly online. I would not suggest doing things like newspaper ads.
Yeah, especially if it's a general newspaper. Right.
And definitely don't put an ad on, like, Judge Judy or the local news. You know, TV spots are very expensive. But Facebook ads, and one of the things that we left off of here is social media. And part of the reason we left social media off is because we tend to prefer email lists.
Yeah, email list is something that if you're going to attempt to do any type of marketing in the 21st century, have an email list. Whether it's just an email list for you as a poet or, you know, an artist, or if it's you as an event organizer or a publisher or whatever you're doing, email lists is the best way to advertise. It's when, you know, it'll probably take you a long time to accumulate one of any size, but you can control when people get the email and you control what is said in the email, as opposed to social media. Like, even if you have 10,000 Twitter followers, for example, and you tweet something about an event, not all your 10,000 followers are going to see it. And they're not going to see it necessarily at the time you want them to see it. So, and these days with social media, you have these weird things where it's like you have to, you know, pay in some cases to get all of your followers to see your thing. And that's constantly changing. So it's not really necessarily a conducive thing. Although on Facebook, if you actually do a public event and there is an option to boost the event to people in the area for like $10 or $20, more people could see it. That may or may not be worth looking at, depending on, you know, what you're looking to do.
Yeah, and one of the other things that we talk about with our email list, one of our other presentations, is the difference between email list and your social media following is the email list is yours, which means in the unlikely event that that social media platform goes under, let's say just Facebook collapses tomorrow, or Facebook bans you because somebody hacked your account and posted some inflammatory stuff on it, you still have contact with those people on your email list. So you might lose all your, you know, 2 billion Twitter followers, congratulations, by the way, but if Twitter bans you, but you still have your email list, and that is yours, and that's not going to go away when you get deplatformed. So that's another reason to keep an email list separate from all these social media accounts.
Yeah, your email list can be your in-house gold mine for that. But talking a little bit more about ads, if you are going to place a print ad, it should be, you know, something specific. Like if you have a regional, paper that focuses on, you know, like arts and craft fairs or music events or something like that, or is known for listing events, you might consider putting it in one of those listings. If it's like a paper that's specifically to, like, say you're having an event in a yoga studio for your poetry thing, and it's all going to be like meditative poetry, and there is a local publication about that, you might do that because the interest will cross over. But if you have just like a regular local newspaper, where, you know, the ads are usually expensive and they're usually like in like a section in the back and most people go right past them, that at that point is just a waste of money because there's no way to really know how many of them are, you know, interested. That's what we call broadcasting, which in the, you know, the old days used to be the thing you did a lot of. But these days with advertising, you want a narrow cast. And that's where Google AdWords comes in. Which is where you could, you know, through Google, you know, all those ads that show up, you could actually target specific interests and specific locations. And the same thing you could do with Facebook or social media ads, where you actually have the ability, you could target a specific area, a specific age group, and a specific interest, and your ad will only show up to the people that you want to see it. So in those cases, that's good, and usually you pay by the click. The clicks are relatively inexpensive, especially for poetry. You might be looking at 20 or 30 cents a click. So, and then if you get them to come to the website or get them to come to a page where they could get more info about the event, you know, you just got to figure how much you're willing to spend on that to, you know, see what kind of result you want to get.
And the great thing about Facebook ads specifically is they show up as if they were a post. So people can comment, tag friends on them and share them. And so it boosts your signal even further. So if you have a good ad and it looks interesting and it gets people interested, often you'll see that gets a lot more traction because people will be sharing it just organically.
Yeah, through social media, one of the benefits of that definitely is the organic traffic you get. Now, another point, you know, to figure if you're going to be advertising your book is, does your book have a theme? What is your book about? If you can identify a theme in your book of any kind, even if it's a loose theme, you could actually go out there and develop partnerships with organizations for advertising purposes. We've had quite a lot of poetry, for example, about breast cancer, and we have a couple of authors who've written books about this topic. They've been able to actually go out there and partner with breast cancer organizations or nonprofits, breast cancer runs, fundraisers, etc., to actually advertise their book and actually get tables to sell their books at these things, you know, book signings and other things. This may not necessarily tie into your book launch itself, But it can, because there's been a case or two where they've been able to put out flyers for an upcoming book launch at an event with that theme, and then get some of the traffic from there to actually come over to their book launch like a week or two later. So it can work that way.
Yeah, and backing up a little bit to the location that you choose for your book launch, especially if you have a creative one, like, say, a yoga studio or a church, which is one that we didn't mention before, often the venue will be interested in getting people in for that event as well, so they might do some of the advertising for you as well, like the church bulletin, or the yoga studio might have a website or some kind of printout that they send out, and they may also advertise it a little bit for you. And a quick little bit of advice about flyers, try to keep the text on your flyer to a minimum. Try to have a good amount of white space and some images, because you want the flyer to be easy to read from a fair distance. Let's say, you know, at least maybe what, like 6 feet away. So you want to have it easy to read and something that you can read very quickly so that you're not standing there staring at the wall. Just a little bit of advice on flyers.
Yeah, we've seen, flyers that were just giant walls of text and just paragraph and paragraph and paragraph, and it's like they're trying to cram as much information as they possibly can into that flyer, and most people will take one look at that and they'll just keep on moving because they're not going to want to read that much.
Yeah, now if you have a lot of information that you want to put on the flyer that you don't have room for, you can put a QR code on there or something so that people can actually scan it and it'll take them to a website where you have all that information. That way you get the quick elevator pitch on the flyer, but then you have the details later. Or you can say, go to this website for more information. You know, you can have some kind of reference to something else.
Yeah. You know, the flyer is supposed to be like the hook, you know. Give the textbook later, you know. So, past, present, and future merchandise. So, the main focus of your book launch is obviously going to be the book that you're launching. It's almost like it's called a book launch for a reason. But the question is, do you have other books that you've written? If you haven't, that's fine. This is your first book launch. Great. Just focus on the book. But if this happens to be your third, fourth, fifth, or sixth book launch and you have other books, you know, that can be great. Do you have an audio version of your book, you know, an audio book where you're actually reciting your poetry? Do you have any other kind of merchandise? Do you have bookmarks that maybe have some quotes from your poems on them? Do you have postcards with poems on them? Do you have pins? These days it's pretty easy to actually get merchandise of a lot of different types, and putting quotes, you know, from your poems on them can be a great selling point. You know, use creativity when it comes to your merchandise, and then at your book launch you can not just sell your book, but you could also put together nice creative little bundles of things to sell. You know, your book with some bookmarks, you know, a bunch of different books of yours, you know, maybe your complete, you know, set of books. You know, you could either sell them directly, or you could even do raffles and put them in, which is another way to generate excitement at this event, because, you know, in our experience, everybody loves the raffles.
Yeah. Especially when they're winning the raffles.
Yes. And if too many people win the raffle from one side of the room, they're going to accuse you of, you know, rigging it. Because we had one book launch where there was a middle aisle, but, you know, where everybody could walk up to the podium. And then there were two sets of people on, you know, both sides of the room. And for some reason, like 9 raffle numbers in a row were all called from the left side of the room. And then people on the right side were like, why are they all winning it? And then people from the right side started running over and like sitting on the left. And then people on the left side being like, we're over here now. We can win.
And so, then they didn't win anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, but raffles, you know, tend to up the excitement in the room, and, you know, people, you know, they like, sometimes people like getting the premium option, so it's like, if you have the book, it's like, you could just buy the book, or you could buy the book with this, you know, this other stuff. Sometimes people like that, too, and, you know, more merchandise is just a good thing to have, because, you know, it's also, there's more ways than just a book to spread your poetry.
Yeah.
So, these are all things to consider for your actual book launch. Well, that's pretty much the main point of this presentation right now. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to actually look at some of the questions that people have emailed us in about this topic, and then we're going to answer them. So we'll be right back.